Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and our very own Andy Knight.
Good afternoon, Joan.
Good afternoon. So this is one of my rare series in The Man Behind the Mic. Or indeed the lady behind the mic, because we've had Ian Mack, our very own Ian Mack.
Which one was he?
He's the media guru.
Oh, that one, yes, sorry. No, I was trying to think of him as the lady behind the mic, but it's not that
No,
one.
That's no. Dame Shirley. Would have been Dame Shirley.
Of course it would.
Yeah, so we've had a little insight into what makes them tick, and so, I don't know, I just thought, let's have a little look.
This could be a very short interview.
I mean, I have got plan B, so don't panic.
Keep it to hand.
So, Andy, I really want to, I know you've interviewed so many people, I know you're quite a veteran broadcaster, certainly compared to me. Who's been your top one?
Gosh, that's a good question to start with, Joan. I don't know. I mean, I've been very fortunate. I've interviewed quite a lot of people, both locally in terms of the community and local talent, and musically or charity work or community work, and also some more well-known stars and so on. And so it's a bit of a mixture. So it's a bit difficult to choose, really. I mean, some of the most inspiring interviews, I guess, yes, have been with local people. I mean, you and I have talked many times about the community spirit on the island just when we've been having a natter. And to give those people who contribute so much to the quality of life on the island is really inspirational. I love that. I think that some of the more interesting interviews I've had with more well-known people, I suppose, I've been, as I say, lucky enough to interview a few. I don't want to sort of drop names particularly.
Well,
I think,
go right ahead, Andy.
Well,
this
no,
is your time.
Elkie Brooks, I think, perhaps, who I've always been a huge fan of since way back in the day when, of course, she was the sort of black leather rock chick in Vinegar Joe.
Always remember Pearls of Singing.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, that's kind of almost her kind of theme tune, I guess, isn't it, really? But she was absolutely delightful. And someone who is, you know, such a veteran performer and such a great singer was just a joy to talk to. And a couple of Julia Fordham. Do you remember Julia Fordham? A great singer, a wonderful singer. Again, I was lucky enough to talk to her. Dave Kelly of the Blues Band was another one who is just so passionate about his blues music and has such a huge, long history of playing with so many blues legends. And for me as a blues fan, that was an extraordinary opportunity. So there've been a lovely mixture of people. I've been very, very fortunate. And John Giddings, who in fact is an old mate of mine, Isle of Wight Festival, John Giddings, of course. He's an old mate of mine. I used to play in a band with him back in the 80s in London, which I take every opportunity to remind him of, try and embarrass him.
Wow.
I don't know how, but it normally ends up he embarrasses me. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But John is a lovely guy, and I had a chat with him, a very interesting interview with him earlier this summer before the Isle of Wight Festival this year. And he's a lovely guy. Just really down to earth, just having the chance to talk to people like that, and in a way, you know, as you're very, very good at, as we know with the interviews that you have on your Friday show, getting behind the public sort of persona of people, whether they are locally public or internationally renowned. It's nice just to find out a bit about them.
So how did you get your hands on Elkie Brooks then?
I'm going to take that in the spirit you meant it. We won't examine the definition of the term. It's just having contacts. You build up contact lists, don't you? I mean, and basically it's just through media organisations and agencies and so on and so forth. And I'm lucky enough that, if someone like Elkie Brooks of her stature is touring down here, maybe playing the Medina Theatre or Shanklin Theatre on tour, they'll call me and say, would you like a natter?
Lovely.
And so it's a wonderful opportunity.
Fantastic, because our very own Chip Clark got an interview with Annie Nightingale.
I know, bless him, and that was superb. Yeah, very, very good interview.
Seen some lovely pictures.
Yes.
They
yes,
both
yes.
look so happy.
Yeah,
great photos.
Yeah.
He was just so, he was determined he was going to do it, and he did it. So.
He's a very capable young man.
Yes,
I've known Robert for a long time, and he does a great show, and he's just got so much energy, and he's just really good at what he does.
It's
he loves
really,
it.
It's his passion,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, and it comes over.
And he was a graduate of the 4Ps.
Yes.
That's run here on Vectors.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, you and I both know how important that 4Ps is to the station, but more particularly to the young people of the island. And it's given, well, an increasing number. And I've been, again, lucky enough, I think, going back to the point, the question you asked me earlier about people I've interviewed, only about, must have been about a month ago, I think I had 7 or 8 young people who were on the 4Ps project here at the station. And they all came in and I interviewed them separately, collectively, and then in fact they turned the tables and interviewed me with a question each, which was a bit unnerving, but they were just great, you know, and seeing the confidence and the skill sets that they learn while they're with us on the 4Ps and allowing them to you know, find their voice, if
yes,
you will,
exactly.
Was just wonderful stuff.
Because it's a practical program, isn't
yeah.
it? It's about promotion mm-hmm. and podcasting and producing, but it's also about, as you've just said, building confidence. Mm. So anybody that was interested in, any young person that was interested in coming on the course, doesn't necessarily want to make a career in broadcasting.
Sure. No.
It can just be like...
But I mean, just basic communication
yes.
skills and so on, and mastering the technology, which we all have to deal with these days. I mean, as you say, those are the sort of practical, hands-on, technical side of things which they gain proficiency in. But they just, when you get some of the youngsters who come through that outer office door, and you know, they're looking at their feet and they're very quietly spoken, if they say anything at all. Obviously, it's a bit unnerving and it's all new and so on for them. And then in the space of a very, very short time, a matter of days, you see, you know, they've got eye contact, they're speaking clearly, they've got something to say, and they're engaging with strangers, with other people. And that is such a wonderful thing to, you know, be privileged enough to experience and to be part of.
And I think I've seen Ian with them when they've come in on day one, hmm. and then when they leave and hmm. he gets them to read the news.
Yes.
And like you say, they've suddenly grown, haven't
yeah.
they?
They blossom.
Stature. Yeah. Which is lovely.
They really do.
And they've just delivered it really professionally.
Whereas, I mean, you know, those people, if you spoke to them, say, the day before they first came in, and you said, would you like to read the news on a radio show, on a proper radio station in a studio, and they would look at you as if, you know, you were saying the most promising, the most scary experience in the world.
Yes, yeah.
And then, as you say, a matter of days later, they're doing it.
Yeah, they've kind of grown into the
yeah.
role, haven't they?
Yeah.
So anybody listening that is interested in that, then please get in touch mm. with Ian Mack.
Definitely.
Here at Vectors Radio.
Definitely,
yeah, I'd love to
yeah.
hear from you.
Yeah.
And I know you must have had, I mean, this show's called Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls. So, as you know, I am the queen of the pratfalls. So normally I've got that bit covered. But I'm really hoping, Andy, that you're going to help me out.
Oh,
because
no.
whenever I ask any of my guests, what's your kind of pratfall moment? When were the banana skin moments when you wanted the ground to open up under you? They all look at me and go, I haven't really had any. And I'm just there thinking, oh, I've had so many.
Well, I was going to say, how long's this show? It's only an hour, isn't it? I'm going to have to do some fairly drastic editing in that case. Oh, there really are too many to mention. I'm just trying to think of one or two that don't involve potential lawsuits against me as much as anyone, to be fair. But just think, when I worked in the music business in London, I had quite a long time in London and was in the music business after university. And very briefly, I remember I was promoting an album by an American singer, not widely known, a chap called David Axelrod. And I thought that was the most extraordinary name I'd ever heard.
Indeed.
David Axelrod. And I was in a record company executive's office promoting this artist to him. And I just, you know, in my sort of rather stupid, glib way, which anyone who listens to me will know is my normal modus operandi. And I just said to this grey suit behind the desk, I said, this guy, David Axelrod, I mean, what an extraordinary name. What a ridiculous name. Who has the name Axelrod? And I glanced down and on executive desks, they have their names on the front. And his name was Paul Axelrod. So the chances, I thought, what are the chances? It's the story of my life. So then I wished the ground had opened up and swallowed me. But I don't remember him being very interested in what I had to say after that.
I was going to say it didn't go very well.
Not particularly. But yeah, I mean, there are many others, but probably far too dangerous on iffy ground to go into.
No, but it's so reassuring when somebody else tells you something ridiculous that they've said or done, because in those moments you're always left thinking, It's just me, isn't it? It's just me. Mm. Why did I do that? Again.
Yeah. Yes.
It's again.
Yes.
Yet again.
Yeah.
Made a complete fool of myself. And it is just, I just get my coat.
Well, people who know me, I mean, just have, you know, just have very low expectations, which I find is the best place to be, because occasionally I can do something surprising, but most of the time I can just scrape by with low expectations.
Yep.
And I can satisfy those all day long. You know.
I think that's a really good life strategy.
That is.
Yeah.
Always aim to disappoint and then nothing can go wrong.
No, that's right. And I find being, you know, quite shallow.
Yes. Oh, totally. Yeah.
Arid.
Oh, completely.
Yeah. Arid, I like to describe
dry.
Myself.
Dry. Oh, I've got nothing going on up here at all. I'm just reading from a script you gave me when I came in.
And then, like you say, if you do have that kind of flash moment where something might pop in of some interest to someone somewhere, then that's just a blessing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But you see, the things that pop into my head are so left field that people, you see, I mean, people get very good exercise with the eyebrows when they're talking to me, because their eyebrows are constantly being raised, either one or both at the time, and going, really, Sarah, are you talking about this? And my listeners will know that that's exactly what they get, but I blame them for tuning in personally. It's not my fault.
There is that. I don't think we can blame them.
No,
Andy,
probably
can
not
we?
No.
The trouble is, when you're like that, you can't ever rely on anything coming when you need it.
Mm.
You know, you think, well, maybe when that moment comes, it will. You know, I pull something out the bag.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily so, is it?
When you're particularly, I mean, like you and I, when we're lucky enough to be able to take part in this glorious thing called Vectis Radio, and it's such a pleasure to do, and you know, it's just enjoyable to the max. But you know, you do have to keep talking, and quite often, either with me, I'm not talking about you, who are far more measured and far more intelligent, apart from anything else. But you just, you know, your mouth takes over, and you just rely on the autopilot being able to keep stuff coming.
Yes, but we don't have an auto cue.
No. And you and I also know that, I mean, even a half a second or a fraction of a second's pause, or what we call dead air, sounds like something about 5 years in duration when it happens to you, when you dry up. Not you, but it's horrible.
And it's not like one is following it with some piece of wisdom, is it?
No.
Or great wit. And the people think, well, it was worth waiting for that. It's usually nothing.
No, I just normally sort of laugh and carry on. But then that's my philosophy generally.
The worst, well, one of the ones that just springs to mind, having listened to your awful moment, was I was working in an advertising agency in London, and it was a technological agency. And if Ian Mack is listening to this, he will be laughing, because he knows what a complete Luddite I am and how I sit in front of this desk like a rabbit caught in the headlights. But that was my job. That was my job, was to advertise technology. What an absolute! You've only got to look at me to say that was never going to work. So good grief! So in I went, and I honestly don't know how I managed it. I must have had a really competent team of brilliant people around me who just sort of shouldered me along and helped me produce this piece of advertising copy. And it was something that I'd written, and no word of a lie, Andy, I didn't understand it, but I'd somehow managed to get it onto paper.
Uh-huh.
And it had gone to the client, and the client had liked it, and the much to my relief, obviously, so that meant I lived another day.
I wasn't sent down
to the dole queue.
Yeah.
So I thought, phew, you know, just managed to pull that one off. Anyway, I was sitting there probably filing my nails, and the MD sidled up to my desk, and I thought, oh no, you know, now what? So he said, oh, just to I just wanted to congratulate you, you know, you did a good job and the client really loved it.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, oh, that's nice, yeah, lovely. So just sat there, hid the nail file under the desk. And he stood there. Now, what he was doing, Andy, I think, looking back, was waiting for some sort of intelligent conversation to come back.
Ah, right, yes.
Yeah, well, you can see where this is going.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have people who, you know, who stand around, you know, there's cobwebs on them all the time, waiting for...
He was there, and he sort of leant on my computer, sort of waiting. He went, yeah, they really did think it was excellent. I'm thinking, yeah, that's great, that's good. But I can't make any intelligent conversation about this, because I didn't understand what I was writing about. So if you're wanting anything back, is not going to come. And I don't know, it seemed like forever that he stood there, and eventually he just sidled off, and you could tell he was thinking, well, what, you know, I've heard good things about her, but it's all smoke and mirrors. She hasn't got a clue.
A little bit sort of a David Brent moment from The Office almost, really, you know, where you get those sort of awkward silences and nobody can think of the next thing to say.
it clearly had high hopes, you know, and thought I was something I wasn't.
Yes.
You know, just just been mistaken.
Oh, well, I've mastered the art. I mean, at my age, I've had plenty of opportunities to master the art in those sort of situations which you so eloquently described, of being able to have a really sort of focused, intelligent look. And that's all you need to master, and to nod and occasionally half smile, and to make sort of vaguely sort of grunting but accommodating noises when a conversation is going on, and just to master the look is really important, because most of the time I haven't got a clue what's going on.
I'm doing
on.
It now. Is that the
yeah? That's exactly what okay. I'm talking about. Yeah, you're doing that really well. Hello. Yeah.
Okay. So this is a masterclass, and I wish I'd met you about 30 years ago, because it was always just kind of tumbleweed, that tumbleweed look.
Yes.
And I'm never any good at masking my expressions. It's always just written across my face.
Yes.
But one guy I worked with, he tried to teach me, and he said, all you've got to do, Joan, is when, the chairman or the creative director walked past, all you've got to do, and it was just when computers had come into the office, the workspace.
Yeah, yeah.
So as he was a designer, he was one of the first to have one. He said, all you do is you get your mouse and you just hold it and you click it and you just move it slightly across the screen. He said, they don't come around. They never come around. They're not interested in what you're actually doing. But from the other side, you look very intense and very busy.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's a skill, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. I thought it's a bit of a con, but it got him through.
Yeah,
he's now working for Apple.
Oh. On my show, I think it was on Monday, I came across a wonderful, I'm always looking for kind of really unusual sort of newsy type items, but not in the news, and I came across this selection of words. We all know about all the new words like emoji and all these other things that gradually are added to the dictionary. But there are lots of old words and phrases that have disappeared from the dictionary, I discovered, and I researched a few of those. And coming back to your point there was a phrase called the owl jacket. Owl as in the bird. Owl jacket. And I had never heard of any of these. And an owl jacket is when you leave your jacket over the back of your office chair so that people assume you're in the office somewhere doing something important and you're actually working. Whereas in fact you're down the road at the coffee shop having lunch.
Yes.
But if you're owl jacketing, then your jacket is still over your chair and therefore you are still ostensibly in the building and still working somewhere.
Ah.
So that's it's all knowing these little wrinkles, you see.
It is. Yeah? It is. I was very slow on that. Perhaps you could, some sort of life class in it.
Well, yes, yeah. Except I probably wouldn't bother to turn up. I'd just leave a jacket on the chair.
I was thinking you could probably make a fortune out of it, Andy, couldn't you?
Actually, a really useful skill set would be how to appear to be intelligent and doing your job well while doing absolutely stuff all.
Yes.
That's the name, nothing. There's the course name right there.
Yeah.
Right.
I've worked with a lot of those people.
Do you know their names? Can I get them as guest speakers?
They were my MD and my chairman.
Yes. Yes, we better be careful with the names on this, haven't we, really? But there's a course there.
It's a skill. It's a skill in itself.
It is.
So, yeah, I mean, that brings me on to your days in the classroom as a teacher.
Oh gosh, yes. I came to teaching very, very late. As I say, I went to London to uni, and without giving you a boring list of things I did, I was in London for about 20 years.
Whereabouts in London?
Mainly in Hampstead area.
Nice.
Which was lovely.
Sandy.
Loved it.
How did they let you in up there?
I don't know. I managed to bluff it.
Yeah.
I just bluffed my way in. I didn't seem to be a threat to anyone, so they let me stay. And,
that's all very Jamie Oliver, Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, I know.
Very lovely up
there. Oh, very lovely. But it was lovely, but it's such a very pretty. But I mean, it's a village in a city, and it was gorgeous.
It
was absolutely lovely.
Oh, village,
goodness, yes. But I had a business up there. I was dealing back in the 80s after university, and having been a musician and then in the record business and so on. And then I had a business dealing, specialising in antique fireplaces, because at the time it was very big business, the gentrification of London and so on. And I loved doing that. Anyway, long story short, eventually I came back to the island. And I just had my first daughter at that time, and was fascinated with her early development, and wanted a completely different. I've done all so many different things. My career path is, well, it's not a path. It's a wiggle through life. It's not a path at all. And I decided I wanted to become a primary school teacher, which I then qualified as, and taught on the island until I retired a few years ago, Loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was fascinating. But and there will be a lot of teachers out there who may be nodding sagely at this point. It became a sort of the law of diminishing returns, if I can put it that way, in terms of what I wanted to do was to work with young people and to be in a classroom and watch them grow. And being a primary school teacher is an extraordinary position to be in, because you have a group of 25, 30 young minds, young people in your class, and you have them for the whole year. You teach them everything for a whole year. And talking as we were about the four P's earlier, seeing the growth and the development and the blossoming and the confidence and the skills and all these different things. And it was just an absolute delight. I loved it. But then teaching has changed and continues to, and always will, I suspect. And that pleasure and that opportunity was becoming less and less for bureaucracy and meetings and training and
admin. Endless admin.
And also, I think it would be fair to say, and I might be stepping a little bit onto a sort of contentious area perhaps, but children themselves at that age have changed. As an age group, I think.
Well, yeah, as happens all the time.
All the time, but there seem to be.
They're more knowing, aren't they?
They're far more knowing, and less. I don't know. I wouldn't say motivated, because a lot of them are. That would be unfair. I mean, grouping them all into one badly described group, that would be unfair. But a lot of children these days have. I don't think they have the role models, and I don't think that the expectations a lot of them have are as realistic as one might hope. You know, they see jumping straight from the legal age when they can leave school to becoming an international celebrity in one field or another.
Yes.
And that's a different kind of take on life, which...
And it's very unrealistic.
Well, yes, it is, but unfortunately that's what the world promises them, or it seems to.
I think they grow up so fast, because with the multimedia that we've got, everything's so accessible to them.
Yes, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
We were more drip-fed information, weren't we? We were kept in the dark a lot, weren't we?
We were. I mean, you discovered things rather than them being given to you, as it were.
Foisted upon you, yeah. So
it is
a new way forward, but it was ever thus, wasn't it?
I mean, of course.
If I think about how my father described growing up and... you know, the stories he used to tell, and indeed my mother, who was brought up in an orphanage, which she wasn't Victorian, but it was just coming out of that Victorian era.
Sure.
She was born in 26, we're talking early 30s. And their punishment, her father used to come and visit her, because her mother had died when she was two, and she had a father who had to work, so she was in this home. And he used to visit her once a month. Mm. And she hadn't done anything wrong.
No.
She was just a little girl who'd lost her mum.
Mm.
So he used to... was allowed to visit her once a month, and he used to take her to the cinema, which was really frowned upon in those days. You can't imagine that, can you?
Gosh.
Thought very common. He used to buy her some sweeties and chocolate, which she used to put up, you know, they used to wear the knickerbockers.
Yes.
She used to stuff them up her little elasticated knicker leg in order to smuggle them back into the home, because she wasn't allowed them.
Oh, goodness.
And this one time, this dreadful headmistress sort of called her. She was running up the stairs, because Grandad would always get her back late because the film had run over.
Right.
So she called her, and as my mother turned, all the chocolates and sweets cascaded out down the stairs. You can picture the scene.
Yes, indeed.
And Mum was probably about four or five, was hoiked off down into the cellar to spend the rest of the evening with the cockroaches.
Oh, no.
I mean, you know, you can't imagine it, but it was just, that was the normal kind of, the norm, yeah. So now that would never happen.
Sure.
So I know I'm going back many years, but it does all change, doesn't it? But not necessarily for the best.
Well, no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that's an extraordinary illustration of a very good point, I think, because, I mean, you know, the old hackneyed phrase, the only thing constant in life is change, and we all accept that and we understand that. But the pace of change during my life, because going back to my young days as a nipper, there were still vestiges of Victoriana, if you will, in terms of how the country operated, how it worked, and the structure in terms of, dare I say it, the class system was still very much in, and I'm going back to the 50s now, but what I've been, I think, very fortunate in many ways to have been growing up through the last 60 years or so, is the rate of change, the pace of change, and the nature of that change has been extraordinary. And I mean, people say, well, yeah, well, if you went back to the 19th century, the same you could have said about the Industrial Revolution, where everything changed beyond recognition. So there are always parallels.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I suppose just actually experiencing it firsthand I wouldn't change anything. I think having been able to live through this period has been very exciting and still is.
Yes, it's just been someone like me, like I say, rabbit caught in the headlights with it. Anyway, I'm going to attempt now to press the right buttons and take us to a commercial break. Please stay listening when we're going to have lots more from Andy, and we're going to be talking about the Isle of Wight and all his memories of this beautiful place we live in and lots more. Stay tuned.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by Jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
Putting the community back into local radio. This is Vectis Radio.
VectisRadio.com.
For the people, by the people.
The White Military and Heritage Museum. Situated on the main Cowes to Newport Road, the museum will excite your senses. Adults and children of all ages can experience the surge of adrenaline on an armoured vehicle ride around the tank track. For a real treat, why not try a ride in one of the Centurion tanks? There's also a covered rifle range to test your shooting skills. Enjoy refreshments in the cafe or the mess bar. Come along to the White Military and Heritage Museum, where you will be welcomed with open arms by our volunteer team. All profits are redistributed among armed service charities. Call 01983 300037 for more details or to book your ride.
Leader cabs have arrived on the Isle of Wight. A modern taxi service that's simple to book, safe to travel and secure to pay. Travel in comfort and arrive in style with our top-of-the-range vehicles. Our friendly, well-trained drivers will take you to any destination on the island and beyond. We also provide transport for special occasions like parties, weddings and corporate travel. In a hurry, save 10% and use our app to book your cab in advance. So call us today on 01983 33000. Leader Cabs. Quick, easy, safe and secure.
What the hell do you want?
Please, sir, I don't know how to put together a radio jingle, and I'm ever so interested in radio broadcasting.
Sit down, maggot, and watch what I do. Read this into the microphone.
This is the Vectis Radio Breakfast Show.
Now watch what happens when I put these effects on.
This is the Vectis Radio Breakfast Show.
Well, Governor, no kidding. You can do all that just from the skills you learn on the 4Ps project.
That and so much more.
Oh, wow, I can't believe this is a free course. I must be in heaven.
Heaven's not as good as this, kid. Now get out of my sight.
To find out more, email me, ian.mac@vectisradio.com, and you could be the next big noise in radio.
Hi, I'm Kevin Wilson. Join me every Monday from 1 till 4 for my personal take on the news, plus a special guest, lots of info on the island's arts and entertainment scene. See you on Monday. Best day of the week.
Stay social and get in touch.
It's /Vectis Radio on Facebook. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
The Lunchtime Social Debate is sponsored by Jobs on the isleofwight.co.uk. If you're looking for work or if you're looking for staff, please call Jobs on the Isle of Wight on 01983 564 880.
Hello and welcome back to Wit, Wisdom and Pratfalls with me, Joan Ellis, and our very own Andy Knight.
Good afternoon again, Joan.
Andy, you've got the voice of radio, the voice for radio.
I've got the face for it as well. But
you said that, not me.
Yes, I know, and I thought I'd save you the trouble. I've been told that, and that's very, very sweet and very generous of you to say it. I mean, I don't know. If I have, then I'm very fortunate. I can't take any credit for it, and, you know,
you've
it's just one of those
any,
things.
No training?
No, I mean, you know, none at all, none at all. But... as I say, I can't take any credit for it, but if it happens to be radio friendly, which I'm told it might be, then I'm very lucky.
You know, you could have cleaned up as a voiceover artist.
Now, you see, that is something that I was told many, many, many years ago in London. I knew, like you, many people in advertising. Well, you worked, of course, in advertising, but I was told that, have I considered voiceover? And I don't know, I was too busy doing other things and never did it. But so, yes, the voice of Harpic loo cleaner could have been
could
me.
Could have been you.
I know. Yes. What an opportunity missed.
Well, I won't work with Nigel Planer, and I say once, he never wanted to work with me ever again. Because
His loss.
I cast him as the voice of a kettle descaler. No, he was the kettle that was all furred up. Because I thought he'd do his young ones, you know. And of course, when he got to the studio, we weren't told, but when he arrived to do the voiceover, he then explained that he was contractually not allowed to do his character.
Oh, really?
That he could only be Nigel Planer.
Because he's a very erudite and intelligent and well-spoken man, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, of course, you know, all went over my head, Andy. Yeah. Any conversation I had with him was very brilliant. But no, so he just had to do, so he couldn't be this miserable kettle that was all fed up. He just had to be a sort of...
And that was what you cast him for?
Yeah, he just had to be a kind of kettle that was okay with being fed up. Now, if you were to ever meet him or look at his CV, I doubt it would ever feature.
No, perhaps not. What a shame. Yeah, how would you have known that, though? I mean, that's ridiculous, isn't
it? Yeah, but it was just one of those things, But it was just one of those moments, I suppose, in other words, pratfall moments, where you're just in the studio thinking, no, now what are we going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Because he's here, he's going to be paid whatever happens.
Of course.
But, no, he was fine. He did a very good, a very good furred up kettle.
Wonderful.
Went on to far greater things.
Yes, of course, absolutely.
Yeah, so yeah, it was a great way to earn an awful, it still is a great way to earn a lot of money, but it's all tied up with celebrities now, isn't it? They all nabble the voiceover, so it's very different to them.
Absolutely.
But you said you were in the music industry. What were you doing?
Well, when I was... I mean, I've always had a huge passion for music since I was very, very young. I've just loved my music. But when I went to university in London, at University College in London, and while I was there, I was already... I'd played in bands just for fun when I was at school down here and so on. And I carried on playing in bands when I was at university, which was great fun. And it occurred to me, this would have been in 1972, thereabouts, I guess, that there were a lot of very talented musicians who were students, who weren't there as musicians at all, but there were lots of students that I met and knew in the student union or on my course or wherever I was living and so on. Lots of students all over London, of course, but in my University College London, who were very talented musicians, and they all wanted to play. So I started something called the Rock Society, as in rock music. And it was a very simple premise on which it was based, which was just to be a focal point where musicians who were students could get together and either listen to music or swap stories, but more importantly, to find like-minded musicians that they could form bands with and then perform around the university campus and the uni scene in London and other places as well. And I started that, and it took off hugely. In fact, I remember, I think, Melody Maker interviewed me at the time, and it was just something, it seemed so obvious to me, but I did that, and of course I was playing in bands as well. And then after uni, I carried on playing. I went into the record business actually after uni. In part, and it's a name that we're not usually allowed to mention, but I'm going to mention it because it's part of my past. Jonathan King. Do you remember Jonathan King?
Yes, I do.
Disgraced since then, of course, amongst many others of that ilk and era. But Jonathan King was extraordinarily helpful. I met him on one occasion, and he put me in touch with various record industry executives, and I was lucky enough to find a door open, partly through his introduction, but hopefully through some persuasion on my part, and ended up in the record business. And then went back to the other side of the record business and went back to being a musician professionally for a few years, and toured a little bit around mainly London and environment, and had a great, great time doing that. But it was only short-lived. I made a living, but not a success.
What did you play?
Drums. And as many people, I'm sure, listening will go, I thought you said you were a musician. Now you're telling us you're a drummer. Because the old joke used to be, of course, you know, what do you call a bloke who hangs around with a bunch of musicians? And the answer is a drummer, but, which you well know. Yeah, I loved it and carried on playing for many years, but just in a semi-pro way. And it was great fun and I loved it. But as I say, I have such a sort of tangential route through my life looking back. Goodness, I would be the worst person to be a careers advisor, I can tell you that. For nothing.
Do you still own a drum kit?
I don't, but I'm thinking of reinvesting in one, so the residents of Freshwater Bay will now be shuddering hear my intention.
Well, this is air of outstanding natural beauty, peaceful, quiet, yes. Idyllic.
Yes, but we do have the heritage of the Afton 70 site, 1970 site,
indeed.
Of course, which was just one of the most powerful memories of my life. And,
so were you there?
Oh, gosh, yeah, rather. Well, I mean, I didn't go to it. I mean, it came to me. Mm. We were living in Totland at the time. I was, 16 or something like that, 16, 17. And it was just the most extraordinarily powerful experience, which I still look back on with great fondness. And I think it had a great impact on me.
I bet, because it just suddenly sort of erupted in your back garden.
Well, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much so. I remember because we lived very local and only a couple of miles walk away, but I actually spent most of the 5 days, which it ran, in fact, apart from the full weekend, just on the site there. But occasionally I did wander home, and I do remember going home. My parents, bless them, who actually attended the festival for one or two evenings themselves. They got VIP tickets because they were local. But I remember going back to our house in Totland at the time and going in through the front door to be somewhat surprised to find our living room absolutely rammed to the rafters with about 12 complete strangers, young people like me, with various lengths of hair, boys and girls, and all with plates of baked beans on their lap. And apparently they'd knocked on the door and asked if they could have a bottle filled with water. And my mother, bless her, being such a caring and generous woman, had said, of course you can, come in. And of course there was a great crowd of them, and she said, have you eaten? Have you at the festival? You can't have eaten. Let me get your beans on toast.
Oh, lovely.
So I turned.
You're not going to tell me they're the Rolling Stones.
Not that I remember. But no, it was just such an extraordinary experience. Really, really very powerful. And I mean, there are a lot of us still here on the island. A great mate of mine who's one of the veterans of that scene, Roger Simmons, who lives out around the corner from me in Freshwater Bay. And there's a huge Facebook group, of course, of veterans of the festival, and lots of wonderful stuff still goes around and keeps it alive, of course. And there's the exhibition at Dimbola, and the Hendrix statue there, and so on. But
it was a happening, wasn't it, as they called it in those days.
I mean, the last time really of anything of that nature, that size, could happen, and it was just extraordinary. I do feel that there's been a lot of misrepresentation in the years subsequently about the politics and the violence and the protests and so. Well, I didn't see any of it.
No.
Maybe I was just lucky, but I mean, the whole memory for me is one of it being glorious sunshine, which it was pretty much right the way through, with the most incredible collection of international music artists, and a crowd of 600,000 people just enjoying themselves.
Fantastic. And do you know who put it all together?
Ron and Ray Fulk, yeah.
Right.
The Fiery Creations, who are still around and about. In fact, Ray Fulk, I think, has just published a book, The
That's
Last
right.
Great Event, which
right.
has just come out. And there was a travelling exhibition this summer promoting that.
Did you, from that kind of vantage point, could you see the sea as well?
Not from East Afton Farm, not from Tapnall and the farm. So, I mean, the people that sat on the downs up at the top where, you know, the golf course is, Freshwater Bay Golf Course,
they would have been,
behind them would have been the sea, but they were the ones that didn't have the tickets. But in the arena, you couldn't actually see the sea.
And what was the attitude of the people who on the island who were never going to go, never going to be persuaded to go? What was the feeling on the island at the time?
Well, of course, as you rightly pointed out, Jen, I mean, nobody knew how big it was going to be. I mean, I think it was anticipated it might be 50, 60,000 people, something like the sort of Bath Festival at the time, which was also a big rock festival. And it would, nobody had any idea that so many people would just descend on the island. Of course, the MP at the time, Conservative MP, Mark Woodnut, who is a name that many people remember.
Another name, coming back to the beginning.
Yeah, and he was dead against it. And in fact, after that festival in 70, which was the third Isle of Wight festival, of course, in fact, there had been ones in 69 and 70, in 68, 69, and then 70, the final big one. But the island wasn't really geared up for it at all in terms of the infrastructure, the transport, or anything. And the people locally, it just happened before anyone knew. And it was an explosion of people. It was just extraordinary. But because, and forgive me if I sort of sound really old, that's because I am really old, but, you know, the overriding sense of the peace, love and the hippie ideal, which was still alive then, particularly from Woodstock the year before, of course, which this followed, it was a very, and as I say, there are other people who take issue with this, but the whole ethos and the atmosphere was one of gentle, a lovely community vibe, everyone looking after each other, everyone smiling. The sun was out for the whole time, which helped, of course. It was warm and dry and lovely. And the music, of course, was just an incredible lineup. And it was just a lovely feeling. And most of the locals, there were some harumphy, sort of, you know, yeah, grumpy of God's Hill, who got really quite apoplectic about it. But in general, most of the ordinary people on the island, I think, were obviously quite shocked by the scale of it, and there were deprivations, shall we say, that all of the residents suffered in terms of, you know, the effect it had on their local communities, particularly out in the West White and Freshwater and so on. But the young people were so lovely and peaceful and polite in the main, that the response from the local community was in kind, and people were very caring and sort of entered into the whole spirit, I think, really.
It's lovely that you've got such a special memory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it really is special.
You can look back and see it as that, which is, I mean, I wasn't there, but that's how I would have imagined.
Well, you're so much younger.
No,
yes.
I'm not. That's how I would have imagined it would have been, you know.
Well, I may have slightly rose-tinted spectacles, which, with the benefit of hindsight, one always tends to wear, perhaps. And
it's,
you know,
the only way.
But absolutely. But, I mean, I still maintain that it was, you know, a huge formative experience for me, just that, you know, 4 or 5 days in a field in the West White at Afton, and you know, the sense of it still underpins a lot of, you know, who I am, I think, today, perhaps.
It's strange, isn't it, because when you go out to the West White now, the back of the White, as local people call it, to think that those huge names were there, and that huge presence and that talent. Were they helicoptered in? Or did they
a lot of them were. Some of them came on the ferry. Some of them stayed locally with families, or were put up locally. Some of them literally carried over their amps and guitars on the ferries with the fans. Some of the bigger acts. I mean, I remember, I mean, there were too many. I'm not going to start name-checking all the acts that were there. But I do distinct, I have some very distinct, very clear memories. And I remember at one point turning to a chap sat next to me in the field in the glorious sunshine, and I'm going to say it's Saturday afternoon, evening, and I remember the big helium balloon had gone up around then. I remember, and the sun was shining on a clear blue sky. It was just gorgeous. And I turned to this guy, who I didn't know from a bar of soap. I mean, he was just a guy sat next to me in the middle of the 600,000 crowd. I was with a gang of, obviously, my mates from school and locally, and we got chatting, as you did, and found out all sorts of interesting things about people from everywhere. And he said, "Where have you come from?" I said, "Well, just up the road, about a mile up the road." And we were talking, and he was saying, "Wow, that's amazing." And I said, "Where have you come from?" He said, "Canada." I said, "Really? Why? You touring around Europe, hitchhiking or whatever, as we used to do in the day?" And he said, "No, I came over especially to see the Doors perform. That's all I've come over for." And he had come from Canada and was sat next to me in a field in the West White just because he wanted to see the Doors.
Yes.
And I just had to walk down the road and see the whole thing whenever I wanted.
What the beauty of that. So who was the number one that you saw that you
Well, the headline act was Hendrix, Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, so you were there.
Oh, yeah. Going back to your earlier question about pratfall moments, those of people who were there, or probably many more who weren't but know the story. I mean, it was very sadly, tragically, only about 2 weeks before Hendrix died. Not his last public performance, but his last major performance. And he was due to headline on the Sunday night. Now, for various reasons, technical mainly, I believe, but we won't go down that road. But he was very, very delayed in getting on stage, and it was pitched up. It was about 2 a.m. when he was due to come on because everything had overrun. And I was with a crowd of maybe 15, 20 schoolmates and so on, and we've been there all together. And they all were there, like me, to see Hendrix amongst others, but we really wanted to see Hendrix play live, particularly after his headlining at Woodstock the year before. And they were all exhausted, as we all were, and they all gradually fell asleep. But before I was nominated, and they should have known better, let's be honest, if you're listening, any of you, you should have known better. I was nominated to be the watchman and to stay awake and to wake everyone up when Hendrix came on.
Right.
You can see where this is going.
I can.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, so I think it was nearer 3 or 4 o'clock by the time Hendrix actually made it onto the stage. So I dutifully went round and woke them all up. In fact, because it was so dark, I probably woke up several people who I didn't know
yes.
as well. But anyway, be that as it may, I woke them all up. I'd done my duty. And I think it would be fair to say in my defence that that was all I was charged with doing. But because of these technical issues, it was at least another hour, an hour and a half before Hendrix actually started playing, even though he'd come on stage. And then he started playing, and I'd say it was about 4 a.m. by then, and turned in, just to see him play live. It wasn't his best live set ever, but it was, I mean, the man was there on stage in front of me. And, of course, unbeknownst to me in the dark, all my gang had fallen back asleep. And most of them never actually forgave me for that.
Oh.
Because most of them missed Hendrix.
Now, I'm batting for you there.
Oh, thank you.
I don't think, Maury, that was your problem.
Thank you. Could you just write that down and sign it, perhaps?
I've said that broadcast.
Oh, okay. Well, I shall use that. I don't think the case is due to be heard for some time.
That was not down to you.
Thank you.
If they were feeling a bit soporific because they'd had a rather nice time that afternoon.
Exactly.
Then so be it.
Yeah, yeah. I did my bit and there you go. So, yaboo.
Well, No, so you didn't bump into Hendrix just doing a bit of light shopping in Orchards or anything?
No,
like that?
No, not that I remember. Not that I remember. I could well have done, but the condition I was in, I probably would have known anyway.
That's true. Because now it's lovely. I know it's on a different site and it's taken on a different feel, isn't it? Like we were saying, everything moves on and we've got Bestival and we've got the Isle of Wight Festival. But I do love the way the island turns into the most kind of the place to be, isn't
it?
Twice a year. I mean, it's always the place to be as far as I'm concerned, and probably you, but it is everybody's like, oh yeah, the Isle of Wight, and we're on the news and everything. And
well, I think we're on the international radar, really, aren't we, almost, because we do have including, obviously, as you rightly say, the Isle of Wight Festival musically, but I mean things like Ventnor Fringe and the cycling festival and so on and so forth, all those things are on the international radar, and we are known on the island for being able to put these things on in the most glorious environment, in a very special way that has a different sort of vibe. I mean, when we live here, we kind of overlook that to an extent because we're so familiar with it. But we do have an extraordinary reputation, obviously, nationally, but internationally, I think, as well.
Yes, like you're saying, the setting is just unique, isn't it? It's lovely.
Absolutely.
And it was lovely for my daughter when we moved here, because she just used to bowl off to the festival and Bestival, and she was 13, 14, and had she said, oh, had we still been living in London, and if she'd asked to go to Glastonbury, I'd have said no way. She's not going to Glastonbury, don't be ridiculous.
No.
But because it was just like going to the park, off she'd go with the next door neighbour and have a fantastic time. I mean, Lord only knows, you know, what she got up to. In fact, I do know what she got up to, because she was on the front of the county press 1 week pushing a trolley full of beer and waving, and
you must be so proud.
Oh yes, that's my girl, I thought. Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, dear me. Yes. Yes, indeed. So we'll draw a veil over that.
Mum.
We've got just a few minutes left, Andy. So given that, you know, you being a DJ and a musician, I imagine that music is very much, you know, that you've had a soundtrack to your life.
Oh, very, very much so.
Like we all have, if
yeah.
you give it
oh, absolutely.
A bit of thought.
But music's been central in many ways.
What are the key songs that mean so much
Ooh,
to you?
That is an amazing question. I do listen to all different types of music.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean, it depends what mood I'm in, like all of us, I guess. But I will give anything airspace. I do have my certain genres that I consider very close to my heart. I love the blues. I've always loved the blues in any shape or form. My chief predilection musically is going back to American mid to late 60s West Coast psychedelic rock, which is my main love and is my abiding passion.
Really?
The Grateful Dead are my all-time favourite band, and bands like Quicksilver Messenger Service and Jefferson Airplane and many, many, many others, of course. But that is my... that's my real personal, you know, that's my desert island is full of American West Coast psychedelic music.
Oh, goodness me.
I absolutely love it.
So have you got special ones from, like, when your daughters were born or something that takes you back
there
to
is
those
a
moments?
Well, actually, interestingly, my all-time favourite track, which doesn't relate to, and this is a very selfish choice, is Dark Star by the Grateful Dead, which is a long 23-minute improvisation, and it's just, anyway, that is my Desert Island disc. But in terms of a song that means a huge amount to me because of my daughters, and as you've alluded to, I have two wonderful daughters, Gemma, who's 28, and Anna, who's 19, blessed with two gorgeous girls, and there is a song which I have always associated with their birth and with them, and which I've given both to them on a single CD.
Oh, I love it.
And it's a one by Paul Simon, an extraordinarily talented songwriter, I'm sure you'll agree. And it's one called Father and Daughter, just simply that. And it's the most beautiful arrangement. It's a lovely song. It's just a gorgeous song. But the lyrics just really speak to me, and I hope to my girls, in terms of summing up that special relationship that a father has with a daughter. So I guess that would be the most important track to me if you were asking for one song.
Oh, that's lovely.
That is a very important song.
And have you got any special ones? I know you've got a very special day coming up.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Touch on it briefly.
Yes, I'm getting married next year.
Oh, and no, you've just broken so many hearts.
Oh, you know that, yeah, right.
You?
Yeah, a lot of people going, really? That old fool? Who on earth is going to... Well, yes, my darling Kathy and I are getting married in Freshwater Bay next year.
Congratulations.
And thank you so much. Very excited. Really looking forward to it, of course. And the song that we will do the first dance to will be Van Morrison's Have I Told You Lately. That's our song.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
We will be opening proceedings with that one, and yeah. That's very special,
and
as well.
That was covered by Rod Stewart as well, wasn't
it? It was, yes. Van Morrison for me always, I mean, Rod great, but Van Morrison for me always a favourite. Yeah. So that's the one. That's
we
the
had the Rod
song.
Stewart version at our wedding.
Oh, would you? Oh, yeah. Lovely. Oh, well, that's great.
My husband, bless him, tried to contact Rod to ask him to play at our wedding.
Oh, wow.
Quite how he imagined that was going to work, I don't know.
Bless him for trying.
Bless him for trying. Yeah. You also, you know, touched Elton John for it as well, but they were both no shows. Still can't understand. Perhaps they got stuck in traffic.
Yeah, probably.
But hey ho.
Yeah.
So, congratulations. Have a wonderful
thank you.
Day.
Thank
Have
you
a
very much indeed.
Day,
I will,
Jay. And thank you so much for sharing your innermost thoughts.
Oh, well, that's been so lovely, Joan. It's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for asking me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We've discovered a little bit about the man behind the mic and had a look into the not at all vacuous mind. But I think it's been a meeting of minds.
I've got my intelligence. I'm furrowing my brows if I know what you're talking about now.
No, I was going to say, I think it's been a meeting of minds. And normally people say that's two very intelligent people kind of in conversation. Unfortunately, I don't mean that at all, who anybody who's listened to the past hour has ascertained. So I think it's safe to say that, Andy.
Yeah.
Please, if you've enjoyed this, I'd love you to tune in next week when I'll be talking to author Rosie Dean. And she's got a new chick lick number out, and it's set right here on the Isle of Wight. So perfect book to snuggle up with in this coming autumn. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. Enjoy the lovely island. Bye-bye now.